What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on iconic Rockfin, Odyssey, or YouTube, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your continued and amazing support. We couldn't do it without the help of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been amazing to us. Tim James, the owner, challenged me 3 months ago to get on this program. He said, I'm going to send you some products. You're going to try it out. And after 90 days, you show me what it did to you. And so I did. I filmed a little video even. You can find that at chemicalfreebody.com/macro, where you can take advantage of a package that Tim has put together for you called the Total Energy and Detox Bundle. It comes with two containers of Green 85, which is like a powder that you mix with water. Looks kind of weird, but tastes surprisingly good. It also comes with gut detox, toxin detox, probiotics, and ultra enzymes. And these are just capsules. You take them every day. They don't mess up your stomach or do anything weird. So look, I had amazing, real, measurable results from this. And this was just 90 days. So I would encourage people to go check it out. Just take a look at least and see if it's right for you. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. And when you check out, also use the promo code macro and you'll save yourself a little bit of money there. Every little bit counts, I would suggest. And also, we have had amazing luck with our sponsor, My Patriot Supply. And good Lord, if 2020 didn't teach you about getting prepared, I don't know what will. You can go to our specialized website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and save yourself some money. They have all kinds of stuff. They have 4-week emergency survival food that they can send to you. They'll send it, shipping is free. You don't have to worry about that. You can keep this for 20 years, 25 years actually is the shelf life on it, or you can have one hell of a picnic. But if you're thinking about the future, look, get prepared somewhere. You can do it through preparewithmacroaggressions.com and save yourself some money, or you can start stockpiling from the grocery store or Costco or wherever. But please just do something, because this is a situation where you would rather be a month or two early than a day late. And after what we saw with the supply chain breakdowns for toilet paper, I don't even want to think what would happen if the supply chain broke down when it came to food. So don't wait on this stuff. Take advantage of it. Do yourself a favor and get prepared. So I think this episode, a lot of people are going to be really interested in. I know I am. I had the pleasure of meeting the whole team from ECI Development at Anarchapulco back in 2019 and then again in 2020. And we chatted every day when I saw them. We had something to talk about because my background is real estate. They're in real estate, but they have a very specific niche. So I would like to introduce to the show Michael Cobb. He is the co-founder and CEO of ECI Development. Hey, Michael, how are you? Good to see you again.
Charlie, nice to see you too, man. Well, hey, by the way, I think the chemical-free body thing is phenomenal. I'm glad to hear it did great stuff for you. Although the last time I saw you, I think you had a full head of hair, didn't you?
I'll tell you what. Yes, yes. The side effect is it makes all your hair fall out. But you'll look,
But it's worth it.
You'll feel better. You know, your mind is clear. But
Great stuff, by the way. Anything you can do to clean out your gut and put the right bacteria in there is phenomenally important. So I didn't know you were gonna talk about that, obviously, but very, very powerful stuff. So great news, man.
If it's possible, I like to have people involved with the show, like the sponsors. Tim James is the owner of Chemical Free Body. He's been on the show a couple times, and he's just a good dude. He was way overweight back in his 30s. He said, "I'm killing myself," and he went and got it. He went to this clinic in Florida and went through a big program there, and they taught him how to change his relationship with food, and from that it turned into vitamins, and he saved his life doing it. And so he's been I love to have these people that come on that can improve the listeners' life, and it might be something like the prepping stuff. You sort of tangible saving somebody's life, or the chemical free body component to help somebody's physical body. But also what you're doing is extremely important as well, because I get emails from people or I get messages through social media saying, where do we go? the world has gotten so crazy. I want to stay I want to stay in the United States, or I want to stay in my home country and ride it out. But I would be remiss if I didn't have a backup plan. And in these days, and after going through 2020, and I kind of joke about it with the prepping stuff, but really, I think it started people thinking about what's plan B. You know, or maybe even plan A, let's be honest here.
some people for both, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so it made me think, like, when you guys, when you announced that you were doing a project with Jeff Berwick, and of course I've got a book with Jeff, and we have this great connection. I was like, you know what? I need to have Michael come on and explain what you're doing in case people are looking for some sort of alternative to staying in the countries where they are. So please, if you can, just give us a sort of a rundown of what ECI Development is doing, where they're doing it, and why this might be of interest to people.
Yeah, sure. You summed it up on the prepping materials. It was a beautiful statement. Better, one day early, or I'm sorry, better 2 months early than 1 day late.
Yeah.
Right. And that really is the hallmark of preparation. And I think, I hope for me, I mean, I do some prepping myself. I am going to check out that website, by the way, because some of the stuff on there is probably more sophisticated than what I do. I generally just go to the grocery store and buy canned goods. But right. but the thing, 2020 showed us that with toilet paper, but Texas showed us that with the ice storms and right. I mean, there have been a couple real tangible examples just in the last 12, 18 months of like, whoa. Like, this isn't just, freaky stuff. This is real stuff that people should be doing, right? And just like a plan B, like for insurance, right? Look, I have medical insurance, but I don't hope to get the best value out of my medical insurance. Like, I don't want to get hit by a bus so I can go, use my medical insurance, right? I mean, no. I hope I wasted that money. And the same thing is really true on prepping, right? I kind of hope I waste that money. I hope I don't ever need to eat my canned food in the basement because my fresh steaks that I grill outside are far better than anything in the basement, right?
Right.
But again, I have it. It's a plan B. It's an insurance policy, right? And so what we've been developing now. And I think when 2019, in fact, we were at Anarchapulco speaking and in 17, 18 as well, we were talking about, or Dollar Vigilante, but it all kind of ran together. Right. But anyway, is this idea of getting an insurance policy for the most valuable asset we have, right? A lot of times people hire lawyers to help them with asset protection, right? They're taking their stocks, their bonds, their money, their properties, blah, blah, blah. And they're wrapping it inside this trust or foundation or corporate structure, whatever it is, right? Because so what they're doing is they're creating asset protection for things, right? But the most important asset we have is us. Like our body, right? And going back to the chemical-free body, right? That's the protection of your most important asset, keeping it healthy, right? And likewise, giving yourself the ability to leave the country you're currently in. Actually, leaving is easy. Sorry, I'm going to bounce around a little bit, Charlie, but we can tap me back. I chase rabbits around, but anyway, so let me chase this rabbit for a second. You know, most Americans and Canadians are lulled into a false sense of security with this idea of, you know what? If stuff hits the fan, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the other word on your program or not.
You can, yes.
Okay, if shit hits the fan, right? I'm just going to get on an airplane. I'm going to leave. And that's true. Yeah, as an American, as a Canadian, we can get on a plane, we can fly to Jamaica, Belize. I know Belize is a favorite country of yours, mine too, right? Costa Rica, Argentina, Thailand, wherever. We can just get on an airplane and we can leave. And we're just lulled into this false sense of security because we show up at the immigration department, one of these countries, they stamp our passport with a tourist visa and they say, hey, welcome to Belize, Mr. Cobb. And I say, thanks, nice to be here. And I go on in. But 30 days later, in some countries, 90 days later, whatever that is, that tourist visa expires, right? And so the key to a plan B is not this false sense of like, oh yeah, if shit hits the fan, I'm just going to leave, right? The problem is how do you stay, right? Leaving is easy. Getting into Belize or Costa Rica, Thailand, Mexico, wherever, that's easy. They want you to come in. Hey, welcome to our country. Come spend money. You're a tourist, right? Staying in the country is a totally different thing. And at the end of that tourist visa, when it expires, right, you now become an illegal immigrant in a foreign country. And I don't know that I really want to be an illegal immigrant in a foreign country, right?
Right.
And so what we've done is we've helped package up some very cost-effective solutions, $20,000 at sort of the entry level, where you can actually get a permanent residency, in this case, in the country of Panama. We offer them in Belize, Nicaragua, other places too, but in Panama specifically, $20,000, you can actually have a permanent residency, which says you can go there for sure, but you can now stay there for as long as you need for the rest of your life if it came to that. And that is truly the highest form of asset protection, because when we do that, we are protecting our liberty. We're protecting our freedom. We're protecting ourself by giving ourselves the ability to get out and stay out. So anyway, that's, wow. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, look, how do you quantify your liberty? It's tough to put a value on that. And especially if you're a day late, then it's really tough. So with these sorts of programs, walk us through something like the Panama one as an example. So you said $20,000 can get you is sort of the entry level. What does that get a person? What do they have to do?
Sure. And so what we've done is in most cases, in fact, all cases that I know of, but there may be others, but anyway, in most cases that I know of, the primary way you get a residency in a foreign country is through investment, right? So in Panama, so going back 1999, I planted 100 acres of teak in Panama. Teak is a very long cycle cash flow. It's a 25-year cash flow cycle. But again, I planted it as an idea of generational wealth stewardship. That was, 21 years ago, almost 22 years ago now, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're actually coming up on harvest. We're 3-4 years away from harvest at this point. My idea back then was I'm going to plant these trees, and in 25 years, I'm either going to need the money and be really glad I did this, or I'm not going to need the money. And I'm going to be really glad I did this, right?
Right.
Right. I mean, 25 years comes unless we die, of course, and then it doesn't come, but it could come for your children or your grandchildren, right? Yeah. And so this timber, generally teak specifically in our case, is this incredibly powerful wealth stewardship tool, which is why I planted the plantation in 1999. Okay, so now come up about 15 of those years, and Panama passed a law called the Special Nations Visa. And because Panama is a small country, 3.5 million people, and they've turned themselves into an incredible logistics, banking, financial center, right? They got the canal, they got the airlift coming in on Copa. They've always been, not always, but for a few decades anyway, been a banking and services center and stuff like that. They needed people. They needed educated people to come down and help them continue to grow their economy. They were kind of busting at the seams for people who could take, especially the logistical side of their business, the businesses that are logistical, to expand those and keep growing their economy, right? So they passed the Special Nations Visa. And what that does is it says, if you're someone from 50 countries around the world, US, Canada, Australia, Britain, your most European countries, blah, 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 you can actually move to Panama. You make a $10,000 or more investment, and then you process yourself through the paperwork and the legal paperwork, and we will make you a permanent resident of Panama. And we want you to set up a business. We want you to work here, right? So it's very, very friendly, and it's very different from most residency programs around the world, where you can become a resident, but you're not allowed to work, right? Because they don't want you competing for jobs. Panama was the exact opposite. We need people to help us grow our economy. So here's the really cool thing, Charlie. This is not only the easiest to get and the least expensive to get, it's absolutely by far the easiest to maintain. When you get your Panamanian residency card, think of a green card in the US, right? It's like a green card, right? It's a permanent residency, right? You only have to show up to Panama one day every 6 years to maintain it. So wow. we call it the asset protection, personal asset protection insurance policy. You take that permanent residency, you stick it in your back pocket, and hopefully you never need it, right? Hopefully. But here's the really cool thing. So the TEAK investment's about $15,000, and then it's about $5,000 of legal work, right? That's the combination, right? And the TEAK investment is in 14-year-old TEAK. So we've since become timber people in Panama and Nicaragua, because again, we have that expertise. So we've purchased new plantations. We've planted baby plantations that are 1 and 2 years old now. So if you match up a TEAK investment with this paperwork, it's about $20,000, and then you get your permanent residency. The nice thing is, so this $15,000 TEAK investment in the 14-year-old TEAK in another 11 years, right? To 25, right? So anyway, another 11 years, that $15,000 investment turns into roughly $90,000. So 11 years from now, you get 90-ish grand back. Oh, I'm sorry. It's an investment. The trees could blow over, burn down, whatever, right? I mean, right. Whatever, at risk, right? But assuming that they continue on to maturity and they're harvested, about $90,000. But in the meantime, you have your permanent residency in Panama forever. It's an awesome program. And I think we've helped somewhere north of 600 people in the last few years get there. So it's real. It works. The process is there. And our team really has helped several hundred folks do this.
That is amazing. I have a buddy that I knew who, when we were living in Las Vegas, we were doing real estate. He was working in land and he was making a fortune, and he was trying to figure out, like, how do I get my money and put it somewhere else? And he went down to Panama and he bought a high-rise building, like a two-story cool looking loft.
Okay. Like
$175,000 for this thing. It was like 2,500 square feet overlooking the whole city. This real modern thing. I was like, that's $1 million. That's $1 million anywhere else, in Miami.
Exactly.
And he's like, man, he's like, I'm telling you, Panama's a spot, It is the place. I've never been to Panama, but I hear great things about it.
By the way, it's
relatively safe.
Oh, very. By the way, send your buddy a note, because it's any investment of $10,000 or more. So your buddy who bought that condo for $175,000, right? He actually could get the Special Nations Visa based on that investment. So you should send him a little note and just ask him if he did it. So for another like $5,000 in legal paperwork, he'll have a permanent residency in Panama, which in my mind is you know, a no-brainer. I would definitely do that.
Yeah. You mentioned that this is, that these programs are available in other countries. What are the other, but of course you said Panama was the best. What are some of the other countries that you guys work with?
You know, let me qualify best for a second, right?
Okay.
Because if you're just looking for, I call the insurance card, right? It's the Blue Cross, Blue Shield. I get hit by a bus. I got my insurance card, right? Mm-hmm. You know, shit hits the fan in the US. I got my permanent residency in Panama. I'm leaving. I can stay there for the rest of my life. It's the best for that, right?
Right.
But if you're looking at a lifestyle solution, so for example, you say, you know what, I actually love Belize. I'm going to use Belize as an example. I love Belize and I love the Caribbean and I love to dive and snorkel and fly fish and blah, blah, blah. I want to live in Belize. Well, then actually you can actually get a residency in Belize. And that would make more sense than having one in Panama because you're probably going to be there a lot. So you'd want the residency, right? So there are different reasons people get it, and best kind of falls into your personal reasons why you're doing it. As an insurance product, Panama, the best. Nicaragua, by the way, you know, Nicaragua's pretty good. It's a little bit more of an investment. It's $30,000 in investment minimum. And then again, about a $5,000 legal government fees, right? So for about $35,000, you end up getting the same thing in Nicaragua. You get a lot more teak. I think you get four baby parcels, which are 25 years to mature, right? Mm-hmm. But again, each of those baby parcels ends up being about 90,000 at harvest. So, I mean, you know, 30 grand turns into what, 9 times 4, 360, right? I did my math, right? Yep. Anyway, they do not let me anywhere near the accounting department. Let me be very clear. Right? Again, it's a different program, but you know, it's $10,000 more or $15,000 more, but you get a lot more in the end. So a lot of people who are looking for sort of that investment and the residency actually choose Nicaragua because again, you're buying baby teak so that the timeline is a lot longer, right? Mm-hmm. And the really cool thing, by the way, is you set up a company. A lot of folks do this. A lot of older folks are doing this, right? But they have kids and grandkids especially, right? So they set up a corporation, they make the investment, $30,000, but then they make the kids or the grandkids the shareholders of the corporation along with them. Mm-hmm. And then once the corporation's set up and once your residency certificate's already presented, like you could actually take yourself off the corporation or maybe you keep yourself on to manage it until your death or whatever, right? But it is a powerful way to give your kids and your grandkids a ton of money in 25 years. And then the nice thing is you cut the trees, you get your money, the trees are replanted, right? You replant the trees. And at that point, if you did it in the name of say kids and now they're older, they can actually retitle the land or retitle the corporation into the name of their kids or grandkids, your great grandkids. And so you start to perpetuate this 25-year cash flow cycle. Again, generational wealth stewardship. So Nicaragua is the best for those people. Right. It's also pretty good for people who want to live there. You mentioned Plan A as we came online.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Berwick and I have been working together to create a tiny home village there for people who are, you know, philosophically like-minded. I'm Charlie, you'd fit right in. I fit right in. And it's wonderful. And the homes start just under 100,000. These little tiny homes are about, I don't know, 100 yards from the beach, 150 yards from the beach. I mean, so you're right next to the beach. It's a beautiful village setting. And the first 100 are laid out. And I think 60 some are already sold at this point. But again, you make an investment in one of these tiny homes, you then qualify for the residency. So another $5,000, you get your residency, right? And that's people actually both looking for Plan B. You know, they get a tiny home, they can rent it when they're not there, they can use it as a vacation home. And then if you know shit really does hit the fan, then they can have a place to actually move into. They don't just have a residency card, but they have a residence as well, right? They have a home. Yeah. But I'll tell you, it's very exciting to me because a lot of times developers in the region see a lot of investor buyers and or vacation buyers, right? They're going to use it 2 weeks out of the year or they're never going to use it. They're just going to rent it. The AVA community, the tiny home community at Grand Pacifica that we've developed with Jeff, fully a third of the people so far anyway, about 20, 23, I think was the number, have actually said they plan to live there, you know, most of the time or all the time. So we're starting to build this community of people, which is really important. You know, you've been to Anarchapulco and, you know, and I go there. I love it. I can go to Anarchapulco and I don't have to worry about what I say. I don't have to worry that people are going to think I'm a freak. Maybe I am. I don't know. Maybe I am a freak. It's okay.
But you're not.
But we're all freaks together there, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, it's wonderful. And so the nucleus of this community at Grand Pacifica is forming. And it's interesting because we've got about 100 addresses between the condos and homes that are already there, already built. And I think we've got about 60 people living full-time at Grand Pacifica now as neighbors and residents. And probably, I don't know, 20% of those people have come from conferences like Anarchapulco or Freedom Fest or others like that, where we're starting to, we already have this I would call the core seed, the nucleus, right? But this next 20 or 30 or maybe more in this time, I mean, it is exciting to see this community of folks coming together and really going to be there as neighbors. So very excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Anarchapulco community is amazing. I've done, you know, I've talked about it so much on this show. I'm sure people are probably tired of it or else they want to go. but it's just, you know, I was so surprised too, that the age range, it was like from like the early 20s to like people in their 70s were all there. And it's like, doesn't matter how old you are. It matters what your values are, what you're interested in, what you find, what you prioritize, freedom and people leaving you alone and the flexibility to do the things that you want to do. And I just love the community there, that I've had such a good response from them. I enjoy my time every time I go there. I have people that I've met that I still keep in touch with. I've had probably half the guests that are on this show are people that I've met through Anarchapulco. So I just really find that like if you're starting a new community, you know, if you're doing one of these tiny home communities and the nucleus comes from people that are going to these conferences, then you are definitely on the right track, because these are the types of people that you would want to build around, because they've got the right mindset. And they also have this amazing sort of vibe where like they feel like they can do anything. And and it's very kind of contagious and inspiring. So it's not a bunch of hedge fund assholes buying these tiny homes that are never going to go there. It's like the type of people that you would want to be your neighbors. I can only imagine what that community is like.
Well, you know, Charlie, I hope you'll come down and visit it. You know, we'll have the first the first 20 completed sometime in October. The next 30 in December. So the first 50 will be done by the end of this year. They're already under construction. So plan maybe January. Plan a trip down, and in fact,
twist, you know, my arm.
Hey, Charlie, but you know what might be fun? A macroaggression. Field trip, discovery tour. I don't know what you call it. Exactly. You know, fam trip or something, right?
What a group. You have that, right? You have these discovery tours.
We do. Yes, we do. But and we do them specifically for realtors, where we'll get a realtor will say, look, I have a group of clients I want to bring down, and we'll put one together for them. And they're great. They're a lot of fun. We could do the same for you. That's what I'm saying. Like, we could do a trip and hey, and it's nice to be, again, you're in Denver, I'm in Shepherdstown, and you know, I don't know where all the people listening are, but I'm pretty sure that your neighbors are not people that you can actually go just hang out and have these conversations with. I know mine aren't, right? And so for people listening to this podcast, right, I mean, to be able to go on a trip for whatever, a week, call it, or however long it is, right, and hang out with people who get it and appreciate who you are. By the way, your description of, you know, people at Anarchapulco, the community, is right on. I feel inspired when I'm there. There's a sense of optimism that's powerful. Yep. And it's very refreshing to be around people who are overwhelmingly optimistic. Even though we see that's kind of a contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we can see all of this stuff going on, yet we retain this incredible optimism, which is It's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that caught my and also to be clear, when people picture an Acapulco, an anarchist convention, what does that look like? Does it look like the parking lot of a Grateful Dead concert? Well, not really. I mean, there's maybe a little bit of that, but
there's a little element of that. Yeah.
For the most part, it was like, you know, it was just people that are like kind of fed up with the whole thing. They came from all over the world, Australia and Europe and Canada, lots of Americans, South obviously. Africa. But yeah. Jeff developed this nice little, I don't know if he intended to do it, but there's been a lot of people that would come for the conference and then sort of just hang around and stay in Acapulco. And they, right. So there is kind of a clicking up of these people into little communities. And when I saw what you guys were doing, what really caught my eye was Belize, of course. Now, I haven't talked about this too much on the podcast. I don't think I've talked about it at all. But in 2007, I bought an island in Belize, 7 miles off the coast of Placentia. It's a little island, 2.5 acres, called Secret Island. The plan was to develop it. It never wound up happening because my life changed so much after that, that I wasn't able to do it. I recently sold the island this last summer, but that was not an indictment on Belize. I think Belize is the best kept secret in the world. I think it's amazing, but it made me sort of come up and talk to you guys like, hey, what are you guys doing in Belize? You know, and so what are you doing in Belize? Because for those that don't know about it, I mean, Belize is a tiny island or a tiny country on the, you know, on the Caribbean side, sort of south of Cancun. Like if you were in Cancun and you just kept going down the coastline, you would get to Belize. It's very small. It's beautiful. It's kind of a combination of, it's got like half of it is like the beach side, you know, it's a lot of coastline and tons of little islands. And then there's another component that is rainforest, sort of up in the hills, in the jungle. And that's a trip as well. So it has a Costa Rica feel to it, like if you went to Costa Rica back in the 80s, you know, like sort of like before all the massive development.
Right.
So talk to me about what you're doing in Belize.
Yeah. So, actually Belize is where I got my start, Charlie, back in 1994. Okay. I was born in 64. So I was 30 years old. I went to Belize with a buddy of mine and I said the exact same thing. I looked at it and I said, my gosh, you know, I say Belize is a country. I was on, you know, Ambergris Key, right? So let me qualify it a little bit more. Ambergris Key, which is one of the islands off the coast. It's a long one. It's about 26 miles long, 1 to 2 miles wide. And, you know, I went out there just to putz around and have some fun with my buddy. And I said to myself, wow, this is like Key West 30 years ago. Now, granted, this was 94, so that would have been, whatever, 64 in Key West. And right. I kind of thought, you know, like, this is Key West 30 years ago. I mean, and I knew what Key West was like in 1994 because I'd been there a few times. And I thought, I'm getting in on this action. I am getting in on it. Because to me, it was like a time machine. Like, I said to myself, if I could go back in time 30 years to Key West and buy a condo, a house, a lot, whatever, would I do it? I'm like, yeah. I mean, time machine opportunities are rare in this world. And actually, I think they really exist tremendously throughout the developing world. And my part of the developing world is Central and South America. So I'm pretty familiar with it, right? But yeah, so Belize, it just caught my imagination. I said, imagine what this is going to be like 30 years from now. So in 1995, I bought my very first rental property, right? And my first rental property was outside the US, right? So for a lot of people, that's crazy talk, right? I mean, your first big real estate investment, but you know, my buddy and I, we each bought a condo. And then we actually started a little mortgage company because what we saw was that, you know, the banks in Belize would not lend money to a foreigner, and a bank up in Denver or Shepherdstown would not lend money on collateral in Belize, right? And so what you had going on is the developers who were building product like the condos that we bought were stuck because somebody would come, North American, to come in off the street and he'd say, yeah, it's, you know, you ready for this? It's a $100,000 oceanfront condo, okay? Right. So I guess it's 100 grand. You know, most people go, all right, well, I got 20 grand and need financing for 80, right? And there is no financing. So the developer has a really tough choice, right? The developer can tell me, the consumer, to beat the street, buddy, get out of here. or they can finance the 80% or 50% or whatever it is the client can't pay right up front. And so when we bought our condos, my business partner, he's an attorney. He did a great job of negotiating, and the developer gave us a 20% discount if we did a full payment. So of course we did make full payment, right? We paid it and we owned them, right? But the problem was, is that he had built 44 condos, done, beautiful pool in the middle. The next two buildings of four each were done. And we bought in the second building of the next, 11 buildings, right? And then the next three buildings were in this state of construction for like a year. And so towards the end of 95, like we're just sitting by the pool with him one day, and or not with him, but we're sitting by the pool, and he comes by and, hey, Jim, what's the deal, man? Why aren't you finishing these two buildings over by us? And there was a hole in the ground for the next one. Like, we don't get it. Like, what's the deal? And he said, well, I've been financing most of my sales, and I just don't have the cash flow to actually build new product, right? And my business partner, again, just smart guy, he goes, hey, Jim, what's the interest rate? Blah, blah, blah. And it was good. He says, hey, Jim, would you sell us your paper for a 20% discount? And I'll never forget Jim's face. He just kind of cocked his head and he goes, yes. It was just like that. Yes. And so then we talked to him some more, and it turns out he's holding, he'd get as much down as he could from a person, right? Maybe 20, 30, 50%, right? But he was financing whatever he couldn't get, paid on the down payment. And interest rates were 10 to 12%. And we started buying paper for 80 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. We started this little mortgage company. It grew. And then full disclosure, we actually turned it into a bank. So I'm in a Key International Bank. So I'm one of the founders. I'm on the board, management committee, and stuff like that. But we turned our business over to professional bankers. I'm not a banker. I don't know anything about it, right? But what we did was we heard a need. We saw a need in the marketplace. And we said, you know what? We can solve this problem for the consumer. We can help provide financing so that North Americans can finance properties in Belize. And we grew our business, and we did it Roatan, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Panama. So we've done financing across the region. We do financing across the region now as a bank. But anyway, that was our first business. And what happened, Charlie, was my buddy's a lawyer. He does all the legal deal money stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a boots on the ground guy. My job was to actually go and inspect the collateral on the paper we were going to buy, right? And I remember walking into a few of these homes and condos, and it was just silly stuff, right? Like the countertops would be too high or too low. There'd be one out. I wish I would have thought to take a picture of this. I wish I probably stage it and do it now. But anyway, I walked into a condominium, beautiful oceanfront condominium. There was one outlet on the living room wall with two outlet strips with extension cords plugged in, with outlet strips with extension cord to an outlet strip to get power on all four walls. There was one outlet in the living room, one outlet, right? Door handles would be at wrong heights. I mean, just on and on. And so Joel and I, we started to look at this. We said, most of this stuff is actually free to fix, right? Doesn't cost anything to put the countertop at the right height. Doesn't cost anything to put all the door handles at the standard height. Yeah, I mean, if you put an outlet every, 8 feet along the walls, okay, $10 a pop. I don't know. I mean, but call it $1,000. So for $1,000, you could take the product that didn't fit a North American consumer's expectations, mm-hmm, and actually make it something that did. And that was how we got into the development business. And so we ended up getting into the development business in Belize. And then we expanded to Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama. And I know you want to talk about Mexico, so we'll get to Mexico in a minute. But Belize, for so many reasons, Charlie, English language, yes, 2 hours from Houston, 2 hours from Miami. It also, this is important for a U.S. Canadian consumer. They follow British common law. Right. If you take Quebec, Quebec's the one place that still uses civil law, right? But we're familiar with common law. And so, yes, even if you see a civil law contract in English, it's still very foreign. It doesn't feel the same, right? Whereas a contract in Belize, like, you can read it, you can understand it. You know, and it's common law, right? So you got the English piece, you got the common law, you got the proximity. And then if you look at Belize today, whatever, that's, you know, 25 years later, we, you know, we started our business there. Belize has grown from this. I mean, there were the tallest building on Ambergris Key was two stories. All the streets were sand streets. There was no pavement on the island when, in 1994, right? I think they paved the streets around 2000 or something. Anyway, but if you talk about this growth development curve, or I call it the popularity curve, right? How popular a country is really impacts the price of real estate and the amount of cash flow that you can get, right? So if a country's really popular, that means that people are taking their honeymoons, right? People from Denver, you know, Shepherdstown, Des Moines, Iowa, right? You know, where does someone from Des Moines, Iowa take their honeymoon, right? Well, lots of people going to the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, used that as an example, right? And in the 80s, that wasn't really true. But today, you got Four Seasons, JW Marriott's, Westin Resorts, you got all kinds of, like, the pinnacle of tourism, Cancun even further up, more popular, right? More mainstream, more popular. And you've got a place like Nicaragua, which is not very popular at all. Like, not many people taking their honeymoons there, right? So if you put the various countries or parts of a country on this popularity curve, a lot of interesting things emerge that we can, you know, we can pull from this, right? Cash flow, price, property appreciation. Belize is in the sweet spot of the curve right now because it's popular enough, right, that it cash flows. It's moving from niche to mainstream. And it's on the cusp, right? We have a Hilton that's open. We have a Marriott that I think just opened or will open this month. It's an Autograph by Marriott. You ask what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're developing a Marriott hotel in Belize as well. And we have a Best Western franchise with 54 residences and I think another 40 coming online. So we have the Best Western franchise. We have a Marriott franchise. There's a Hilton and a Marriott open. There's a Wyndham and a Hyatt in the works.
That's rare, right? Was there a prohibition against chain hotels for a while? Or it just seemed like there wasn't any?
Well, there weren't any. No, it's a great question. There was no prohibition other than the marketplace, right? When you're a niche market, it's really hard because a lot of things, this popularity, I mean, again, a lot of things pull out of it. What's your airlift like? Right? How many airlines are flying? Southwest Airlines started flying to Belize 3-4 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now, something like that. WestJet out of Canada, right? So you had these discount air carriers who opened up, say, 4 years ago now or something like that. Anyway, I'm close on that. Anyway, but the point is that as a country moves from not very popular up to kind of more popular, you know, edging into mainstream, a couple of the things happen, like the Southwest and the West Jets, and right, they start to come, which means the ticket price goes from $500-$600 to $200-$300. Now all of a sudden you get a totally different kind of consumer, which is why we went out and got the Best Western franchise, right? And yeah, we overlaid it on top of 54 condos we'd already built. And again, we got another 40 coming online this year, right? And ultimately we'll have about 200 in our Best Western. But again, that's a mid-market. The average daily rate, you know, 125, 150, 175 at Christmas. That's the rate, right? So again, the Southwest client, that's what they want to pay, right? They want to pay that kind of a nightly rate. Whereas the Marriott will be 350, 400, 450, which is, again, a different clientele, oceanfront, you know, big, fancy, all that kind of stuff, right? So, but again, this transitional moment from when a country is going from niche, diverse, fishermen, you know, to mainstream, Belize is on the cusp. And it is so exciting to see this transition happening and to be a part of it, not just see it. I mean, we're helping to drive it as an organization, as a company, and that's pretty exciting. But to come back to the residency piece, we've been able to investment residency in Belize is actually pretty pricey as residencies go. It's $250, right? But what we've been able to do is pair two of our Best Western residences, which, you know, they run 100 to about 150. So $225,000 Best Westerns gives you the qualification for investor residency, or one of our Marriott residences, which start around 300. Obviously, it's over 250. That also qualifies you for the residency in Belize. And then they also have something called a QRP, Qualified Retired Person. It's a little different residency, different rules, right? You have to be 45 to be retired. So most people can, you know, qualify for that. But it doesn't allow you to work. It never allows you to progress to citizenship, which the investor residency does. So for people who just literally want to retire to Belize, spend time in Belize, the QRP is perfect. I think the cost on that's, you know, $3,000-$4,000. I mean, it's not very expensive. But again, it's a very limited residency, but it's a good one. I mean, it's a very good one if that's what you want to do. But if you're looking for what I'm going to call a residency with a lot of enhanced benefits, the primary one being that it actually can evolve to citizenship in the future, the investor residency there gets you that. So,
and the location, are these the Marriott and Best Western, are they on Ambergris Key as well?
Yeah, the Marriott is on the water on Ambergris Key, and then the Best Western is 3 blocks off the water on Ambergris Key as well.
Well, for those that don't know the geography of that, that's the tourist spot. That's yeah. where you want to be. I mean, if you could pick any place in this country, it's a small country. I mean, I was when I bought the island, I was living in Henderson, Nevada, a suburb of Las Vegas, and Henderson has a population of about 300,000. So does Belize. You know, and I was like, damn. I mean, the whole country does. I mean, we just have this in this little city, and it is spearfishing, scuba diving, the blue hole that you've seen in all the pictures is there. If you're interested in nature, you've got the up the hill, you know, up in the mountains,
Mayan ruin,
the rainforest and things like that.
Yep.
It's so funny when I the first time I went there in 2007, you know, you fly into Belize City, there's the bar with the little guy that works there in the bar, you know,
Jet's bar. Yeah.
he's there. Hey, what's going on? Everybody's got to go up and like hug him or something. I don't know. Yep. And then I fly into this, you know, from Belize City down south to Placentia or actually I think I flew into Dangriga, which is more remote. And you land, like, I landed on, like, I don't know, a football field. I mean, it felt like that. It was like grass or something. We were in a really small plane.
Yeah, dirt strip. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was a trip. And then you go and, you know, and you stay in the place where I stayed, I think it was Belizean Dreams. It was. Beautiful. Great pool. You're right on the ocean and you're going. Yep. And the whole time I'm going, how come everybody doesn't know about this place? What's wrong with this place? Why is it that nobody knows about this? It's pegged to the US dollar. Now we have our own problems with the US dollar, believe me, but the perceived stability of that.
Right.
English is the primary language, which I think for a lot of Americans and maybe even Canadians too, that kind of throws them off to like, oh, you know, move to Central America, but I don't speak Spanish. You don't need to in Belize. Everyone speaks English. English is the language. It was British Honduras before it became Belize. So it has that, my point is you're not going to feel like you have you're unable to communicate if you're in Belize. And I mean, some parts of Mexico, my Spanglish is pretty limited, but I can get by. But I found that a lot of people in Mexico speak English as well. So that, but true. Belize, for those of you that are like, I'm a little uncomfortable with making a move to a new country or at least, you know, setting up a residency program there. Look, do not worry about Belize. Belize is cool. You will hit the ground running and be fully functioning there.
Yep.
And I just find that to be such a home run. But let's get to Mexico because I know this is in the future, but let's at least get people thinking about the future. You guys are out scouting. Is that right? Looking for a good spot to do what you've done to maybe replicate or even expand upon some of these projects that you have in Nicaragua and Panama and Costa Rica and Belize, and now adding Mexico as a component to that. What will that look like in the future?
Yeah. You know, let me just wrap up on Belize real quick and then segue into the Mexico, right? One of the things you mentioned about Ambergris Key, I mean, right, the whole country has 350,000 people. And it, you know, figure it's like Vermont, right? It's 180 miles north to south, about 50 miles wide, right? So it's kind of like Vermont or New Hampshire, right? It's that kind of thing, right? But 70% of all the tourism revenue for the country comes out of Ambergris Key, right? So this little 26-mile island, 1-2 miles wide, generates 70% of all the tourism revenue for the country. And what we've seen is, whereas Grand Pacifica has become a community of people who are like-minded, who want, you know, residential. They're going to live there some or much of the year. What we're seeing in Belize is it's more people who are looking for an investment, right? The Best Western studios at 100 and a quarter, right? With actually really nice return on investment, right? Those have the people owning the residences, either the Best Western or the Marriott, tend to be investors. They're not lifestylers. Yeah, they'll vacation, they'll use it, but it's really an investment as opposed to a lifestyle. Mexico will be lifestyle once again. We've identified one prop. By the way, we're looking in and around Puerto Vallarta. Jeff went with Jason and I one day, and we wore his ass out. And poor little Lucy got so, you know, we wore them out, and they were like, "We're not going with you tomorrow." And we're like, "All right, you know, we'll probably move faster without you, Jeff." So anyway,
yeah, so we got a glass of wine in one hand, a dog
in the other. No, actually, Lucy ran her ass off. We were stomping around a bunch of properties. Oh, it was great. She was just running around having a ball, right? But it's a long day. I mean, it's a 7 a.m. start and a, you know, 8 or 9 p.m. return kind of thing, right? You're just, mm-hmm. I mean, because you got to pack a lot in there to look at properties. But we found a property with a couple of the neighbors' properties that actually look really good, and they are what we're looking for. So we have identified a property that will work. So that's done. I'm actually headed back down there in the middle of June. Probably see Jeff. He's going to come. I don't know where he is right now, but he's going to meet us in Puerto Vallarta.
I quit keeping track of him. We're on Telegram together, but I don't even ask. Exactly. I just assume he's someplace exotic.
He's somewhere, right? Yeah. Anyway, so he's going to try to make it over to Puerto Vallarta for at least a day or two while I'm there. And we're going to go look at another property that Jason's identified that actually might be a better property because the guy that developed it, it's a much larger property. It's about 1,000 acres. The guy that developed it with, and this is the key, resilient community. He developed it 14 years ago. He developed it with an eye towards building a resilient community. He went in and he planted thousands of fruit trees. He put in a bunch of fencing around pasture land. He built some barns. He put in water wells that are wind and solar driven, right? It's off the grid. And so his focus was building a resilient community, which is what Jeff and I have talked about doing, is to build this, again, community for people that you know, read his newsletters, listen to your podcasts. I mean, you know, this community, right? This community right here, to be able to serve this community in Mexico with a resilient, off the grid. And I'm a big fan of hybrid, by the way. So we probably will bring electric in, and I think, yeah, whatever. I mean, tie into it or don't tie into it. That's a choice, right? That's a personal choice. But to give people the ability to do it, so there is some hybrid there, if they want it. Anyway, but agro, eco, resilient community in Mexico with products starting again under 100. Excuse me, running up into whatever you want to spend, right? You can buy 5 acres and build a mansion on it if you want to, right? But again, most people are looking at products in that, you know, 100 to say 250 range. That seems to be a sweet spot of the market for us. But I think there are some people who have followed Jeff's advice, who now have quite a bit of money in crypto. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think one of the things that Jeff and I mean, I've known Jeff for goodness, I think 12, 13 years. We're trying to figure out the first conference that we spoke at. So he and I spoke at a lot of the same conferences for, I don't know, 8, 9 years before I actually was invited to come speak at one of his, right? But we'd see each other at the conference or the speaker's cocktail or whatever. I mean, we just got to know each other. We enjoyed each other's company, right? And, but the thing that he has done so well for his listeners and readers is he was talking about crypto way, way back. And so the people that bought Bitcoin or bought, you know, Pirate or whatever recently and all the other stuff in between, right, have done really, really well. So we, by the way, we do accept crypto. He beat me up about, I think it was 4 years ago at one of the conferences. It might have been the Dollar Vigilante when I was down there speaking. I think he was like, "Do you accept crypto?" I said, "Not yet." And he said, "Well, you need to if you're going to talk to my audience." I'm like, "Okay." So I don't know that we actually figured it out in 2017, but by 2018, we were taking crypto. And we are one of we were the only developer doing it. Today we're one of the few developers who accept crypto for any of this. So you want to get a special nations visa in Panama? No problem. You can pay with crypto. You want to buy a beautiful mansion at Grand Pacifica? No problem. You can pay with crypto. To us it's all the same, right? Yeah. But so in terms of product price points, it's really interesting to see that it really, I would say 100 to 250 has always been our sweet spot. But we just opened up a beachfront community in Grand Pacifica, homes 350 to 400. And I think the first 14 or 15 of them sold in like a week or 10 days. And many of them, some of them, maybe not many, some of them were full crypto. So people are really, they're taking their crypto and they're diversifying. Look, if you bought Pirate at 6 cents and now it's worth $8 or whatever, I'm making up numbers, I'm close on that, right? But if you bought Pirate at 6 cents and it's worth whatever it is, $5, $8, $10, like, you know what? You take a little bit of that and roll it out and buy a piece of hard asset real estate with it. Yeah. That's good diversification. And we're seeing people do that right now. Same thing in Mexico. Obviously, we're going to continue to take crypto. We're going to work with Jeff. One of the things that he's committed and he was very excited about this and he's committed to doing it is after we get the property located and we've made an offer, right? But long before we do anything with it, right? Before we figure out what we're going to do with it, he's committed to doing some surveys into his readers and listeners and viewers to help us understand what it is that they want to own, right? What kind of community do you envision? Like what kind of homes, how big are the properties? What are the price points? We've done a lot of this survey. In fact, we have a lot of this survey because we do it all the time, but he's going to take that and put it into his tribe and his community so that when we get that feedback, we can actually develop and build the community that the people want. And I'm very excited about that. It'll be the first time we've done it on a whole project basis. We've done it on neighborhood basis. The tiny homes at Grand Pacifica were a direct result of feedback. We asked, we got the feedback, we built the tiny home community. And so on a neighborhood basis, we've done it. We've never done it on a project basis. So I'm very excited about this. Yeah.
That is so smart because, his audience, I mean, his Anarchapulco Dollar Vigilante audience, they already see the world differently. Their priorities are much different than the general public. And to get there, I bet you're going to get some things that will blow your mind. You'll probably think, why didn't we do this from the, why didn't we do this with all these communities? You're going to learn so much. Those people are freaking smart.
Yep.
I've been to a couple of the conferences and you sit in the bar at night and you meet interesting people from Australia and Canada and you start to have these conversations and I can only imagine the sorts of things that they are going to propose, these ideas that they're going to bring forward. That's great. Let me ask you this, since you mentioned Nicaragua. Uh-huh. It's a country that doesn't get a whole lot of talk in the United States for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But how is the political stability in a place like Nicaragua? Is it okay? Is it and what about the functionality, the airport situation? Is it accessible? Is it easy to get to? Is Nicaragua Are we going to look at Nicaragua 30 years from now and go, man, that thing, that place turned into a new Costa Rica too. It's got the same sort of topography and it's got all these great things about it. It was a hidden jewel. Are we going to be kicking ourselves for not taking a more serious look at Nicaragua?
I'm going to answer that question. I'm going to answer the last question first. You don't have to kick yourself if you decide to get to Nicaragua and buy some property there. So do that and you won't be kicking yourself in 30 years, because otherwise, yes, you will definitely be kicking yourself in 30 years. In 2000, we bought our Grand Pacifica property. It's huge, 2,500 acres, 3.5 miles of beach, a mile deep. Wow. So, and we kind of understood pretty quickly, not right at the beginning, but very quickly we understood with some good counsel from some of our board members that what we were really building, if we wanted to do this right, was a small town. Like when you got 3.5 miles by a mile, like that's a town, right? Yeah. And so we went out and hired urban planners to help us do it. And just simple things like, you know, where do you put your services? Where do you put your waste collection? Where do you put your waste treatment? Where do you put your water systems? How do you do your roads so you get good traffic flow and you don't, because we didn't know anything about it, but we knew we didn't know anything about it. So we went and hired an urban planner to help us do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so so in 2002, I moved there with my wife and my 2-year-old daughter. By the way, speaking no Spanish, so got around just fine. I took Spanish lessons and got to the point that I could speak decent Spanglish. But anyway, but we ended up living in Nicaragua first for 3 years, and we had another old daughter who came along, and we were living in Nicaragua. We'd been there 3 years, and my wife and I went out to dinner, and we kept our house in the States, by the way, because we thought it was a temporary 2-3 year assignment, right? Like, okay, go get this thing started, move back to where we live today in the Shenandoah Valley. And 3 years into it, my wife and I, Carol and I, went out to dinner one night. And we just made a list of all the reasons to stay in Nicaragua, all the reasons to go home. And we ended up staying in Nicaragua another 11 years. So we actually lived in Nicaragua for 14 years. We loved it. The only reason we came back is our oldest daughter, the 2-year-old, when we went there when she was 15, got accepted into a high school ballet program in New York City. And let me tell you that there's no way Mama Bear was living in Nicaragua with Baby Bear in New York City. So, yeah. that wasn't going to happen. So we moved back to our home here in the Valley and Nicaragua is a wonderful country. You ask about the government, the government's stable. Look, they want foreign investment. They need foreign investment. They love foreign investment. As long as you remember that if you're foreign, keyword being foreign, investor, resident, visitor, whatever, it's not your country. Like, so just keep your nose out of the politics, don't have any opinion on it, and you'll be fine. And that's exactly what we've done for the last 21 years. I mean, we've created jobs, we pay our taxes, we've promoted the country. We absolutely have no opinion on politics whatsoever. And we've had a great relationship, which actually is not much of a relationship because there's just not much to talk about, right? Which is just fine, right? I mean, I'm very capitalistic. Let's just keep our business apart from the government. We don't ask them for anything, and they don't really ask us of anything, right? I mean, we cooperate when we need to cooperate on stuff, but there's no, there's no mixing of the two, which I think is the right business methodology. Yeah. And it's worked for us for 25 years and we'll carry that forward into Mexico as well. One of the things that I like about Nicaragua especially is that the US government doesn't like Nicaragua.
Yes.
And you know what? That's all right. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I think that's the right strategy. You stay out of their business, they stay out of your business. That's right. That seems like a good plan. I am going to have all of the links to all of these projects in the description for people to click through. Right. The website is ecidevelopment.com. Michael, is there anything else any place else for people to check out and find out what you are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what we would ask is we always love to know where people came from. So we set up a special address for you, Charlie, macro singular, macro at ecidevelopment.com. If you send us an email, we will absolutely respond. If you want that, we have a consumer resource guide. It's not a sales document. It's truly a consumer resource guide for buying property overseas. We have another research paper on residencies around the region. So if you're thinking about a plan B, you want to get a second residency, it's a great research paper. We have a research paper on teak and timber. We have a general research paper on investment in the region. These are all investment, or these are all white paper, research paper types of things. We also have country handbooks. 70 to 100 page handbooks about countries, everything from hotels, restaurants, national holidays, bus schedules. I mean, kind of like a tourist book, but on Nicaragua, Belize, Costa Rica, Panama, Ecuador, Argentina. So again, these country handbooks. So if any of the listeners, viewers today want to, get that macro@ecidevelopment.com and just in the subject line, just tell us what you might be interested in, or any of the communities, any of the properties, any of the projects. We've got a great team of property specialists and residency specialists on staff. So again, if you have questions about property or residency, we'll direct you to some of those folks appropriately to put you in touch and help you get the information you need to really make good decisions that are right for you. And we're all about that. You heard me talking about listening to what folks want. We take a very different approach in sales because we have properties today in four countries. Mexico will be our fifth country. We don't really have to sell, right? We can listen to what people want, and we can then serve them with the product that's right for them. And by the way, if somebody comes through and they want a $5 million mansion, on the desert in Latin America, like, we don't have it, but we know people that we can refer you to who again are good, high quality folks. We'd be happy to give you some referrals out so that you can make sure that when you're working in this part of the world, you're really working with good people, and that's important.
And that, and I can attest to that because I had a chance to meet some of the team both years at Anarcapulco. Yep. Real great people. We just chit chat, talk about all kinds of things. These are, once again, I'm trying to solve some problems for my audience. And if I can solve this problem for you, and the problem is, what do I do if the shit hits the fan and I need to get out of here, or I want to, or maybe I'm just a little disillusioned with my current country's either where they are now or with the trajectory in which they're headed. And I'm maybe not as married to the idea of staying in the United States as I thought I might be. Well, look, here's a solution to that problem. The people that are involved with ECI are the types of people that are like-minded like us. So you're going to be in good hands with this. And I say put it on your list of things that you to check out and see if this is something that solves the problem. And Michael, you are the best. I will see you in Mexico at Anarcapulco, I'm sure. I'll probably see you before that at some of the at some of these other developments, because I am my background is real estate. I love international real estate. I geek out with stuff like this, and I like places that are nice and warm too. Looking for a condo in Antarctica. Believe me, I am most definitely looking for a place where it is sunny all the time. So I love that. So, hey, everybody, if you like this, if you think that this episode might also help somebody that you know that is thinking about this sort of move, please share it with them. The algorithms don't like me or the name of the show, but this information is so important and so valuable for a lot of people. So, Michael, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, everybody, take care out there and share the show when you can. Thank you.